Hi everyone, just a pre-note. Today's podcast features a discussion with Teresa Valentine where she mentions an actor who's inspired her, and it goes a little bit dead, the sound. And the actor she refers to is Ruth Negga, spelled N-E-G-G-A. Just wanted to make that clear. Please feel free to support this podcast in any way you can. Thank you. Hi everyone, this is Tim at North and South Podcast. This is a creativity podcast, and it is a real honour today to welcome Teresa Valentine, who is the actress and star of Forgotten Voices, which is the play written by David Moorhead, who has been on the podcast a few times. He wrote the play, and it's a bit of a family historical tradition for him. But Teresa has brought the role of Eva Moorhead Kadali to life. So today we're going to be talking to Teresa about that role and about her acting career and just talking about acting generally. So, Teresa, thank you very much for coming onto the show. How are you today?
Oh, thank you for having me, Tino. I'm grand today. It's a good day. The sun is shining, so it's definitely a good day.
Yeah, it's just gone away in Liverpool. I don't know where you are. Yeah,
I'm in Manchester, and it's glorious.
Yeah, well, as you say, it never rains in Manchester.
Oh, so, never.
For people around the world, delusions of grandeur from me. Manchester is notorious for rain, and Lancashire never winning the cricket league because the matches get called off. So, Teresa, tell me about Forgotten Voices, the play written by David Moorhead, and how you got involved with that.
So Forgotten Voices is a one-woman show, which is amazing in itself, as we obviously continue to talk about Eva Moorhead Kadali, who it is inspired by, which is David Moorhead's grandmother. So very close to David, that's for sure. So we actually find Eva at the point of turmoil. We find her on a ship leaving South Africa, and she's traveling to Southampton to start a new life. Really, and she's in the state of turmoil, like I say, wondering, do I, don't I? And she then takes us back on a journey through her life, and you start from when she's 10 years old and then right up to her present, which is the 1950s. And it's a remarkable story. David has spent a lot of time and care and consideration with every single word. Would you like to think that every writer does, but sometimes with time and everything. But with this one, from the first, he sent me an actual scripture of what Eva wrote in a newspaper that was my audition piece. And it was probably about 3 pages. And he said, just do like a section from it, send it over. It was really quite relaxed, bless him, which I'm so super grateful for. But I read that and I said, David, I would do that an injustice if I only did a snippet. I said, I really want to spend time and do the full thing. But obviously, I would probably need an extension to learn it all and do it properly how I want to do it. It's your grandmother, da 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 da. And he accepted the extension. And yeah, then he gave me the part, which was just amazing. I got the email through, and it was instant elation. But then also in the next breath, I was like, oh, it's a one-woman show. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. And it's Eva Moorhead Kadali. She's a real person. So it just gives it an extra elevation, that's for sure. And hopefully we've done a justice. I feel that the feedback's been wonderful. So I think that's true.
Yeah, and I watched it during lockdown with the video version, and I'm going to see it in a few weeks in Prescott live, which I'm looking forward to. Because, as you say, it was a strange time when it was all being put together with COVID, and you had that extra pressure of being the only actor. Now, do you say actor or actress now here? Did you just say actor for everyone? Is that right?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, say actor for everyone, don't you?
Yeah.
So I watched it and found your performance very powerful and the story very powerful as well. And I was quite amazed by the accents and your facial expressions. And obviously I could see that you put a lot into the role. How difficult was it for you to get that accent right? When you did the audition, did you speak in that accent?
And no.
how does, I mean, I can do voices. I can imitate people. Yes. A lot of people can't. I'm not the best at accents. But how did you approach that?
Well, I didn't attempt the audition piece with the accent. I just didn't. I found it very hard to even hear South African accent. You know, I'd hear it in films and TV, and I'd be like, I don't know, I can't quite place. So that I started on the back foot because I couldn't even notice it. So the audition piece, I didn't. I just sort of did my own voice and did it more with, I went with the feeling and the conviction more for that. And David didn't actually specify. So I thought, okay, if he really wanted that, then obviously I would have tried. But as soon as I was offered the part, I contacted a fantastic vocal and accent coach called Hazel Holder. And we worked tirelessly on the accent, and she was fantastic. She coached me really well. I didn't realise that South Africa has sounds daft, but there's more than one dialect. Obviously, just like the England, but also languages, and there's different tribes that come with the languages. And you know, I was naive. I didn't know any of this. So we've gone for a Zulu South African accent because there's connections there for Eva. A little bit watered down potentially, just for, you know, people listening and watching. It's 70 minutes of that accent and everything. We want every single word to land. So yes, it's maybe not as strong in some places, maybe a little bit more clipped, just for a better, clearer understanding. But yes, I've had compliments. And Dean Rogers from Manchester Cathedral, he came to the show at Hope Mill last year in Manchester, and he is from South Africa. And he watched the show, and he actually thought, he knew I was from Manchester, so he knew it wasn't my accent, but he thought that my relatives were from South Africa because my accent, he said, was on point. So I was like, oh my gosh, that's a huge compliment. And it must be said, as soon as I knew that he was from South Africa, all the pressure. You think he's going to know if it's good or not. You know, other people might go, yeah, it sounded good. But, you know, unless you're around it all the time or you're from there, you're not really going to know. So that was a huge compliment. And then he invited us to put the show on at Manchester Cathedral to start off Black History Month this year for them. And again, that was, again, a huge compliment and a huge nod to say, yes, one, this is a great piece, which it really is. But then also that he thinks that I've done the accent justice, which is nice.
Definitely. I mean, I know that when I've done a bit of acting, and I'm not an actor, sometimes assuming an accent or a voice, it can be hard to sustain. Yeah. But it almost helps with you getting into the role because you're not quite yourself. And yeah. I think that if you did that original, when David first watched you, if you were doing that without the South African accent, obviously there's a lot of raw talent there that you're using to impress before the accent then comes later. And I'm often amazed by the accents because I often see Liverpool accents, you know, on TV and in drama, and you can really, really tell when someone is not from Liverpool or they haven't studied it enough. And I think that's quite a compliment to get a nod from someone from South Africa. So I was very impressed with it. But again, the person from there, to get a nod from them, that must have been very, very... very nice to hear as well that you got that right.
No, it really was, because you don't really, as an actor, it's, you know, I do this show, but with anything, you really, once you're in it, you kind of get in your own head a little bit. You kind of do have to sort of just take a step back, and it gets to a certain point where you put all your hard work in, you do all the prep beforehand, but as soon as you get onto that stage, you can't say if it's good. Because you're in it too much. It's down to the audience. Only the audience can say if they enjoyed it or not. So that's why getting the nod from Dean Rogers and people saying, oh my gosh, I've been to South Africa, or oh, you didn't drop the accent once, or I believed that was your native accent. I was like, oh, that's a huge compliment. But it does take a lot of hard work. I'm not going to lie and say that, oh, yeah, you know, I just rocked up and did the Zulu South African. I wish it was that easy.
No, that's good. I think the most famous example of someone getting it wrong is it Bedknobs and Broomsticks, or Mary Poppins with the American actor, I forget his name now, trying to do a Cockney accent. And He just doesn't pull it off very well. So, you know, that is a big part of it, though, isn't it? Coming across genuine. Now, even more, Hector Darley is might be considered a forgotten voice. And as you say, David's done a lot of research. He spoke to someone who is at university, who studied Eva, to bring the story to life. And in many ways, her life may well have just been forgotten about. And, you know, as a woman, as someone who was an immigrant, as someone who came from an oppressed minority. So how important was it for you to do that? Because this is part of Black History Month. Is that something that you're passionate about? And how would you sum up Eva's achievements, if you know what I mean?
Well, David, bless him, it was quite hard for him. This really should be made into a film. I think it's good, you know, he's got the content there for a fantastic feature film, genuinely. It would be great if that was to happen and I was in it. But bless him, he couldn't put everything in there, you know, and that's just testament to her. Like, well, I think any human life, you know, there's if we've lived a full life, we should all really be able to make a feature film. But this one is, you know, it's politics, there's sacrifice in there. She's inspiring, you know, she has inspirational moments where you feel like, yes, you know, if I see an injustice, I'm going to speak up next time. You know, Eva did, I can do that. And then there's heartbreak, but then breathtaking moments as well. She definitely lived a full life, that's for sure. But for me, as you know, my mum is white English, my dad is black English, Jamaican heritage, and I didn't really know much about black history other than the mainstream, yes, slavery. But we don't really talk about that. Nobody likes talking about that. So let's just sweep it under the, you know, under the carpet, and we move on. We don't, but actually there's a saying that's always stuck with me. I think it's Carl Sagan. I think it was him, scientist. And he said, you have to know the past to understand the present. Mm-hmm. And I think for me, definitely, my mum, for years said, I really want you to go to Jamaica, but I want you to go with your dad. So you have a proper experience. You can meet your family. And, you know, as a teenager, it's like, oh, I'm not really bothered, mum. No, I don't really want to go. And then I went with my dad. It was me, my dad, and my boyfriend, Matthew. And we went for 2 weeks. And the best day that I had of the holiday was because we had a car. And we went from one side of the island across the top, right to the other side. And we were stopping off at different family members' houses and going to restaurants and eating with them. And I loved it because I got a better understanding of who my grandparents were, who my dad is, and who I am. And it just strengthens you. Now, obviously, that's a personal because that was my relatives. But any history enriches us today. I think if we have a better understanding and we go, that was awful, that was really bad. But then we look at society today and we go, you know, things have changed, but things haven't changed. You know, Eva talks about strikes, you know, train strikes, and it's happening now. And one of the lines is, if you work full time, you should be able to feed your families. Well, that's still relevant today, you know, and that's sad. And so obviously that's just society at the moment. But going back to the black history, I felt that's been lacking in my life. And at one point I was quite embarrassed, really, because I didn't know that much. And there's so much more to black history, so much more than, you know, the negative, the oppression. You know, there was empresses and everything, you know, and kings, and there's a rich history there that needs to be told. And there's a fantastic show that I only found out about last, I think it came on last year or the year before. It's called Sorry I Didn't Know, which is, that's something that I probably would have come out with, but Sorry I Didn't Know. And it's a panel on ITV, and it's like they've made it into a bit of a game. And it's facts of black history. And it's just remarkable. It's on every Sunday at 10:45 throughout October. And if anyone can get to watch it, it's great because you then think, oh, yes, there is more to our history other than what we've been told and then swept under the carpet. I think it's definitely important. I think it should be taught more in schools. That's a whole other different podcast, I think. For me, it personally, Black History Month is just amazing. Just to celebrate the culture. It's a fantastic culture. It really is. You know, my boyfriend is white English, and he loves, you know, coming in to, you know, even just to parties and funerals, the way that, you know, my Black family do funerals. It's just, it's different, you know. So, yeah, I do think that Black history, it should be taught more. It should be spoken about more positively. And even the bad things, you know, it's talk about them. You can't change history. You know, that's already been done. But like I say, from the quote, you know, you get a better understanding of today. And it's a ripple effect. It's not that long ago, really, that these things were happening. It's it's quite sad. You know, Eva's grandson's here. So it really isn't that long ago.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a history teacher and I'm big on history, and I've done quite a few podcasts on history. And when I did the first podcast with David, it was under the title like Creativity in History and Politics, because they're all very important themes. But I actually went to Ireland with my dad about 6 years ago, and my dad's mid-70s now, and my grandmother was from Cork, Southwest Ireland, and everyone left in the like 30s, and me aunt left there in the 60s, my late aunt. I went back there with my dad, and he went round and said, this is where I used to come on the summer holidays. This is where your nan was born. And it was so powerful. And again, when I was young, I probably wouldn't have valued that. But to be taken on a history tour like that, it's so personal and evocative and gets you thinking about things. It's amazing. But I think Black history, it's become a little bit more of a political thing recently, because I know certainly when I started as a history teacher 20-odd years ago, Black history was part of the curriculum, and it's almost become a bit of a loaded term now with this kind of culture war nonsense, which I find very, very depressing. This idea that if you want to talk about something that's off the mainstream or that doesn't affect the majority group, that makes you woke or whatever. But again, that's another minefield I won't go down. But the history is so important, and different themes of history are really, really important too. And I think in this play, as well as the fine performance and the fine script, there's a good combination of like if the personal and the political, whereby it talks about someone's life and the personal aspects of that life. But as someone in Eva who was a big part of the trade union movement well before Nelson Mandela, etc., in South Africa, and to be part of something so important in terms of how different people were treated in South Africa. You know, it's a very, very important story, which, as you say, it's right for a film. And, you know, I've seen the film Mandela, and I know a lot about Nelson Mandela, but this is an aspect that I've done some South African history as well when I was at uni. And I hadn't done this kind of early 20th century trade union aspect, pre-war, etc. And I found it really, really interesting. So there is a very important message there. And I think it's just a great story as well. And the way you capture the role, that's what I want to move on to next. But how difficult was it being the sole actor in the play? Because obviously I've watched a few performances where there's one person, and you know it can go either way. And I thought you were brilliant, but you've already alluded to like the pressure you felt because of that. So how did you overcome that, and how did that change your approach to the play?
David was fantastic with the research. You know, he gave me and Margaret, the director, everything that he'd found, bless him, which I felt really enriched me as an actor. So then reading that prior to having the final script, I was coming from a place of knowledge, which I wasn't blind, where I was with the first audition and the first sides that he sent over. And her history makes you feel. So, it definitely added to it. And I felt loaded going into the rehearsal space. You know, I felt anger, I felt sadness, inspiration, as we talked about, all those feelings. It was just putting it truthfully into the scripts. And I'd like to think that every script that I receive, I'd like to start from the place of truthfulness. Humans feel, you know, you can, anyone can get a script and just read the words. But being an actor, I think, to take it to another level and make it human is to feel. So, you know, you can go through the scripts and you can do, you know, line for line, verse for verse. You can really dissect it. But if you don't feel what those words, you know, we speak words to provoke something from the next person that we're speaking to. So they have to do something, but it's the way in which we say the words and the way that we feel it and our intentions behind it. So I felt that thankfully David did a lot of the research before, and I can't remember the name now, it's completely gone, but you are right, there was a gentleman who had a lot of information who did his PhD on Clements Cadarley, and then obviously Clements Cadarley is Eva's husband, and it was alongside each other. Do you know that saying where they say behind every successful man is something like that, isn't it?
Every strong man is a strong woman.
That's the one. Well, I think, this is a perfect example that she's not behind him. She's right beside Clements. They're there together. We did a Q&A, and this is remarkable because this hadn't actually come out from David until this Q&A. And he said that when Clements was ill, Eva did his speech. And she, you know, she stood in for him. That's very much a partnership, you know. She had her own, you know, in a news article for the Independent ICU, the newspaper, and the women's section, you know, she wrote her own speeches and things like that. They're very much alongside each other. But in South Africa, there's it's called the Long Walk to Freedom. I can't remember which area of South Africa, though. But there's 400 statues. Clements Cadarley is there, rightly so. But right beside him should be Eva, and she's not. And, you know, I think it's fantastic that David's, you know, named it Forgotten Voices, because she is forgotten. You know, alongside so many other people, you know, there's going to be way more stories that are just as remarkable that we don't know. We don't know these stories, and it's just so important. And again, just going back to the, you know, the Black History Month, people hopefully, I mean, it shouldn't just take a month where people want to, you know, find this information out, but it's a perfect excuse to come along and, you know, and just go, actually, yeah, let's go to something that is about Black history and learn something. And this is just enriched with so many facts. It's remarkable. That was one thing, though, with the script. You think, oh, you can't get dates wrong. Right. it's there on the internet in black and white, and people actually know that. Oh, well, actually, you know, if I said, I said to David when we got back into the rehearsal space, I said, what year was your dad born? I was trying to just get it set into my head. It was 1938. I was like, right, okay, 1938, that's Bobby, right, okay. And, you know, trying to piece it together, to trying to make it make more sense in my head, because you don't want to get those wrongs. You can't be getting facts and dates wrong and things like that. So yeah, pretty remarkable. Like I say, I'm a huge fan of David, obviously, but this script really is something special. When I first got that, like I say, that first piece through, and then he sent a little bit more, and with each script it just got better and better. And I never thought, you know, you'd read a script and you'd go, that's it, that's amazing, and then he'd send another one through that I'd revised, and it was just, it's such a pleasure, it really is such a pleasure doing this script. But the pressure is on because it's a one woman show, like you say. Pressure is on, and you know, you don't, with an ensemble, one might go wrong, and then you can go, oh, right, that person's gone wrong, or I've gone wrong, and you're kind of there to support each other. Whereas if I sort of lose it, it's on me. I have to try and find my way back. But that's a great challenge. And then, you know, if something like that does go and you think, oh, I got lost a bit there, and you bring yourself back, that's a challenge that you can then overcome, and you could go, oh, I did that. And then you feel a little bit more secure then, the fact that you know that if you get lost, you can always bring it back, because it's definitely a fear. You don't just want to be looking into the lights and not know what to say.
What you said as well about even more Cadarley, I think given the time that it was done as well, or the times that she lived, it was particularly notable as a woman. She was considered an equal in many regards and did speeches and was so active. And I think that that's another reason why, as you said, she should be alongside Clemence Kadali in the long road to freedom. Now, you've actually been put forward for Black British Theatre Awards Best Female Actor for the role as well. And what was it like finding out about that?
That was a huge shock. It really was. I got the email through from my agent and I was like, huh, me? Is this a mistake? Because like I said before, you can't tell if it's good or not. That's purely down to the viewer, the audience. But that's a huge honour. I mean, just to attend an event like that for me is to be in a room full of inspiration at the National Theatre. And I've never got the National Theatre live. So I've watched things on there. I've been to the cinema to watch it as well when they stream it. But this year it's on my list to get physically to the National Theatre, and it's supported by the National Theatre, and that's where the ceremony's at. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I couldn't be more grateful to the universe right now, because I'm going. It might not be to watch a play, but I'm going in my own right with a play that I am just in awe. I'm in awe with David. I'm in awe with Margaret, because she's a fantastic director and she really created a safe space, you know, and she made it feel like, I think one of the, I'm sure it was the first, it was definitely the first couple of days of rehearsal, and Margaret said, is there anything, Charissa, that you're a little bit concerned about, that you might, you know, just having a little bit of a problem with how it's going to happen? And there was one or two scenes, and she worked right through, and we did it, and then I felt instantly better. She created a safe space. So I think by a Margaret creating a safe space, that then enabled me to be a better actor. It's such a team effort, you know, with these things. You can't just say, oh, an amazing actress, which is very nice, but in order for me to do that, I've got to put in the hard work, the director has, and so has the writer. If you don't have a good script, it's just not going to be a good piece, is it? You could be a great actor, but the writing's rubbish, and in this case, that's definitely not it. So we're all going, and I think rightly so, in some shape or form, we're all up for that. That's what I believe. It's we're all there. We're all hopefully winners. Hopefully that could be the next one. I won it. That would be remarkable.
Yeah. Best great. Of luck with that. But thank I mean, you. David mentioned this in the original podcast, how you, Margaret, and him kind of just clicked, particularly when it was all the COVID uncertainty and you had to approach things differently. And he said that was just so important. And I think that's wonderful that you felt like you could say, listen, I'm struggling with these two particular parts. Margaret goes through it. And I've spoken to David before about his ever-evolving scripts. And I suppose it must be so difficult, you know, to not feel a sense of imposter syndrome and to not look at your own work. And I don't think you ever feel it. You've nailed it because of your high standards, etc. You know what I mean? We're often the harshest judges of ourselves, aren't we? But,
absolutely.
You know, that kind of like the way that you worked as a team, I think that that's evident in the end product, as it were. And,
best
of luck with that.
Yeah, no, we did. We all worked very hard on this. And I think because Eva is a real person and David's grandmother, I come off stage and I'm just like, are you happy? Was that all right, David?
Yeah.
As long as you're happy, I'm happy, because I don't want to do his grandmother and his work an injustice, which helps me get from out of my, you know, people talk about actor's ego. And it's real. And imposter syndrome is real. So to get out of that, I've said to myself, you are merely a vessel to help tell Eva's story. Yeah. So when the nerves kick in, that's what I then do and say to myself, you're the vessel, you're telling Eva's story. It's as simple as that. You've just got to tell it truthfully for the audience to have a good time and to learn, because you do learn a lot when you watch this. I learn a lot, absolutely. So watching it, you do definitely go on a roller coaster. The way David's wrote it, my gosh, I'll be on a high, and then all of a sudden I'm like right low.
Yeah, David mentioned that, saying that you would go up at the end going, was that okay? To his grandmother. But that's part of the power of it all, isn't it? And
yes. Absolutely.
What gives it that kind of... like it's a present moment thing, you know, it's about the present as much as the past. And I think that those links are just so important. And you watch it, don't you? And you sympathize because of the personal issues. You think, oh, yeah, I know where she's coming from, even if you haven't been through exactly the same thing.
Absolutely.
Now, you've been in a few other bits and bobs as well, David was telling me, and I did a little bit of research. So you've been in quite a few little things. What's been your proudest moments in those other performances?
I think, so I got my agent when I was 19, so I've been doing it a fair while. I'm 32 now. People say you shouldn't say your age, but I'm very proud to age. I'm very proud to have birthdays. That's my mindset. So yes, I'm now 32. And so I've been doing it a fair while. And I'm quite lucky really to say that I probably got one or two jobs a year. Yeah. But this last year has been remarkable, really. I'm probably going to go with doctors. So that's like a rite of passage for me. And Ruth Nager, who is she's my inspirational actor. I adore her. She started off, she did one episode in Doctors, and I've now done my one episode in Doctors, and it was a really good part. I really enjoyed that. And I had a moment of when I was traveling to make up in the morning, and obviously you're feeling the pressure. And I just thought, this is what your younger you wanted. You're getting paid, Charissa, to be here in Birmingham for a week to film an episode of Doctors. And when I was 5, I was watching Coronation Street and I saw Angela Griffiths in Corrie. And I said, oh, Mum. Now, whether or not it's because she just looked like me, I don't know. But I said, oh, who's that? So then my mum explained that she was an actor and da 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 da. And it was from then seeing Angela do it, and where I said I want to do that, and my mum thought it was just going to be a phase. So a year passed, still saying, please can I go to drama school, drama classes? And she got the money, and I went. And 5-year-old Charissa, you're doing it, which is just, yeah, it's a funny feeling, that, you know, because you're told no so many times. You get more no's than you do yeses. So the fact that I am proud of myself, my younger self, my past self,
Charissa, what have been your greatest successes and challenges? And also,
so that was a real,
what's the reality of the acting world?
Because it's often doctors,
romanticized,
sure.
So, from the outside, isn't it? Just like, you know, great job. Once you make it, it's you feel like things are picking up. What's the reality for you? And what have you found like the most difficult and the most rewarding things about it?
Oh, okay, so when you're saying about the successes and challenges, is that personal or acting?
Maybe a bit of both, because I also wanted to mention like how you fit in your life with your kind of acting life, because, you know, sustaining an acting career can be difficult. So maybe you could talk about that as well.
Oh, okay. So I would say, so I think this comes in with sort of actorish as well. So success personally would be one thing that I've wanted to do, is like each year I kind of set out, this year's going to be doing, saying yes to lots of things. So Shonda Rhimes did a book, A Year of Yes. So I kind of did similar. And when I was 25, I got the opportunity to go to Uganda for a month and volunteer there, because I at the time was a podiatric student at the University of Salford. So I went with them, and that was a success in the sense of it's something that I always wanted to do. I've always wanted to do charity work in the, preferably in the African continent. I always wanted to go to Africa. So that was one of the successes. But I think life is you do have lots of successes, but then also lots of moments, don't we? So maybe I should just say life, just as a whole, I'm living. But the reason why I say that is because Angelina Jolie, who is one other inspiration of mine, not just for acting, just for how she is just as, you know, humanitarian and charity work. She gave the advice to other actors of, extremely paraphrasing because it was on the red carpet years ago when I was a teenager, but she said along the lines of, don't just have acting as your life. You've got to live life, because then that enriches you as a human and you then become a better actor. So living life and doing things like being a podiatrist. So I got to early 20s and I thought, I really want to be an actor, but it's hard, you know? And then I looked at sort of people who was 10 years on me, why are they stopping? Why do they then give up? What's the reason? And one thing that I noticed was money. You know, it's the lifestyle that, you know, you want to put food on the table. And if you do want to, you know, maybe go away for that nice holiday and things like that and buy clothes and food and all that jazz, you've got to have something alongside it, because you could do one job and you could get a lot of money for that one job. But then you don't know when your next job's going to come. So you can't really live off that. So it's being realistic, I think, in the acting industry, incorporate life where I've had to make sacrifices, you know, but I found a job that I can do alongside it. Now, I don't like it when people say, oh, yeah, so you've got something to fall back on. Well, no, I'm not falling back on it, because my podiatry work, that's the one that gives me, you know, I'm, you know, I'm living with my boyfriend now, you know, I can put food on the table. It's great. I can do all these things that I want to do. I can live life, which Angelina told me, you know, when she was on the red carpet, she gave the advice. It was specifically to me. That's how I felt at that moment in time. So yeah, I can then live, like she said, but yeah, I'm not falling back on that. That's something that I will do continuously in between jobs until obviously we hit the big time. And it's, you know, you're doing, I'm working with Shonda Rhimes, you know, on Bridgerton or something like that, which so anything with Shonda I would absolutely love. But yes, it's hard finding that happy balance. And I suppose you could put that into challenges. You know, I tried to be a podiatrist in the NHS. And I was only there, I wasn't there that long, to be honest, because I didn't want to let the NHS down. And in private, so I'm in private clinics now, and I can manage my clinics and the people who come to see me, my clients, patients, they're fantastic. They actually all understand that, you know, if I have an audition, they might have to just change the time or change the day. They're flexible, I'm flexible, and I am super grateful that I've found two clinic owners who was happy for me to do that, but now I'm only at one. And yeah, as long as I'm flexible, they're flexible. And so I think that's the nice happy medium between the two. Because again, even when COVID hit, I was on tour with a band of gold and we just got to Bath, and then, you know, we went down we got the call to do the warm-up, got to stage, and then they said, Boris has said we're not allowed to go on. And I was like, oh my gosh, right. And that was it. And then we get sent home. And then obviously, as we know, there was a week that I only went into clinic once or twice. And then everywhere got closed down. But then I was able to go back in the June and work as a podiatrist. Whereas if it was just acting, or even I've got lots of actor friends who, you know, work in hospitality, you know, or, you know, theatres, all those was closed. So they had nothing. So I am super grateful for, it was 3 years, it's a degree. So it did take me away a little bit. I didn't focus on acting as much as I wanted to, but now I can. So for that short term, I worked a little bit during that time. And I think with every job as well, you learn something new. So if I hadn't have done the Band of Gold, I will honestly, hand on heart, say this one woman show, I don't think I would have been able to do it as much of as a justice of people saying that I am doing. Because it was a good friend of mine, Alwyn May, she, whilst we was on the tour, I said something about, well, this one, I'm just, you know, just learning a lot. And she said, well, actually, Charisse, you don't ever stop learning. With each job, you take something from it. And I'll always remember that. And I think that's exactly what is happening. You take something. But then also life as well. As we go through life, we take through different experiences. We grow, we take things and we go, oh, I probably shouldn't have said that or done that. And, you know, reflection, we look back and we take different things, positive, hopefully, or negative. We learn from it in life. And then you can, again, like Angelina Jolie said, you can then apply that to any script that you're working with an actor. But I think what annoys me as well is if somebody says, oh, you want to be famous. I think if you want to be famous, don't try and become an actor. That's not you're not going to get there quick and fast in the most in most cases, that's not, you know, I'm sure it has happened for some people, but for a majority, it's a long time before you start getting consecutive work. You got to put the hard work in. Yeah, maybe just, I don't know, there's a lot of social media influences now, isn't there? So maybe just, yeah, stick to doing something like that if you would prefer the fame. And you might probably get more money, I think. I don't know what money they're on. But maybe I'm doing the wrong thing here.
It's interesting, though, because I watch a lot of TV and a lot of film. And certainly pre-COVID and before I had my son, I went to a lot of theatre. And I used to look up actors on the internet, Wikipedia, and you'd see some actors who'd been absolutely incredible, amazing in like two or three films, and then that was pretty much it. And then you have people who, like, literally it looks like they've got five jobs a year, and it just seems so random. And I remember listening to Ewan McGregor once, because I don't know, like, Ewan McGregor's basically been in everything now, hasn't he? And he says that when he's offered a role, he says every role he takes, he's never sure if there's any more coming. You know what I mean? And that's very much what you're living like. And people have this idea that it's all great. And the pressure as well of fame, etc. You know, it destroys people's lives. Like, you know, people like River Phoenix, you know, a great prospect. And we've seen even well-established actors, and, you know, it's too much for them. It's a very difficult life to get right. And there's this romantic outside view of acting and the acting world, but the reality is very unpredictable, isn't it? So.
Oh, it really is. And I think that's where, when it comes down to, you know, to my sister, bless her, there was a moment where she wanted to be an actor, like a big sister, which is all very cute. And you think, you know, at the time I didn't want to say, no, you don't want to do it, because then it might look like I was like, no, I don't want you to rain on my parade. What if you're successful and I'm not? No, it was nothing like that. I just knew the industry by then, and I didn't feel it was suited to her personality. So she went along and she did a few drama classes with an agent. So she got a real taste of it. And she came to her own decision quite soon on that it wasn't the industry for her. And I was proud of her, actually, for that, because a lot of people, because they are under this illusion that it is one thing, even when they kind of see it for what it is, they still continue because, you know, well, they started now. And, you know, that's, I suppose, something that could be, you know, you could say is a good thing. But in this one, I think for mental health reasons, it's a very hard industry and you do have to have a thick skin and you have to not really want to do anything else, I'd say. I do it because I genuinely enjoy it. I'll be honest now, with this Forgotten Voices, the second time round, I put a lot of pressure on myself, I think, because of the nomination, because people have watched it and gave fantastic feedback. And I feel that it's genuine feedback. You know, I've had people say, oh, I just came because, you know, well, it's you. But I didn't expect it to be that good. Like, it's amazing. It's a fantastically written, you performed it fantastic, and you, so all this is because I don't do it for that, it's added the pressure. And I went on in Birmingham and I was terribly nervous. I really was, you know, the nerves came. And then afterwards I spoke to David and I felt like I didn't do it justice, and David was like, what were you talking about? I said, the audience loved it, I loved it, like, what are you doing? And that was all me. I put that pressure on myself. And really, you shouldn't, we're not brain surgeons, that's what we have to remember. This, if I go on stage and I fluff a line, well, in real life, I'm speaking to you now and I might get my tongue twisted a little bit and then just reset. Well, you know, Charissa, Eva can do that on stage as well, but don't beat yourself up about it. You know, you've got to enjoy it. So that, and then I went in after Birmingham, I've said, you've got to enjoy this, Charissa, because if you're not enjoying it, what's the point? You don't really want to do anything if you're not really enjoying it. Acting is not the industry for that. You've got to enjoy it. So take the pressure off yourself. You know, there's not a brain and you've got a scalpel to it. No one's under your, you know, hands to live. You're just there to entertain and to tell stories in the most truthful way. And if you affect the audience, and that's also another thing Margaret said, I think it was Margaret, anyway, we was all speaking, the three of us together, and something about the expression on my face. And Margaret said, it's great that you're not afraid to look ugly. Because as a human, when we cry, it's not the prettiest sight, is it? My goodness, you know, and I think you can't go on stage and just want to be this pretty little thing, not in drama, because my thing is dramas, really. I do love a good drama. I have a cousin who does the West End, and he does musicals, and he does it fantastically well. I'm not a great singer. I'm okay with Cure, but you know, put me in the chorus, I'll be okay. Yeah. But please don't give me a solo singing. You do have to be kind to yourself, take those moments out, check in with yourself. But I just think that's life anyway. And I think if you come to anything, any job or any friendship, relationship, any meeting from a place of truthfulness and honesty and genuine, you're going to win at life. You know, there's a in any walk of life, in any profession, there's some nasty people. So somebody said a couple of months ago, and I heard somebody wrote it in somebody's card about don't let life make you hard. And I remember hearing that when I was younger, and I'd be like, what do you mean, don't let life make you hard? Now I realize that actually when you walk through life, you come across obstacles and situations and people that are not particularly nice, but you make a choice as to how you react to that and how you walk through life. So that's what I try and do. I try and approach everything, every situation, with my truthfulness, and just try and be a good person. And I think then when something, you know, something, if you get a no, a million no's, might I add, actually. Yeah, like I said before, more no's than yeses. You've got to feel good about yourself. I think if you're an actor and you don't feel good about yourself, you're just going to rip your brain apart, which is not nice. Like I say, the rejection is real in this industry. And if I didn't love it, I wouldn't do it.
Mm. You've kind of preempted one of the other questions, which was what advice you would give to aspiring actors there. You might want to mention a bit more on that. But I just wanted to say, maybe you could combine that with what's your approach to acting? I mean, there's different ways of approaching it, method acting, whatever. And what are your key influences, it might be, in terms of other actors or maybe writers or plays that have inspired you?
I'm one of those, I will watch everything and anything. I don't, you know, as some people say, oh, I only watch this type of film or, you know, it's read that type of book. I take inspiration from all walks of life, really. So the arts, I'm pretty much, I do love theatre. I will try and go and watch as much theatre as possible. But I mentioned it before, Vega is a fantastic actress. And I think she inspires me because of the type of work that she does. You can tell if you looked through her CV, her IMDb, she's taken on roles that matter to her. I that's how I see it. She's got a plethora of different acting, you know, characters. I've not actually got around to watching it, but The Preacher is one that was so, oh wow, Ruth's playing this, is, you know, she's wacky and she's like, she's kick-ass, she's great. Whereas when I first saw Ruth Nager, she was in Love Hate, which is an Irish gangland drama, and she came in and she was just this softly spoken, she was just different from all the other characters. And then she's done, I don't know if you've heard of it, Loving, which is about an interracial couple in America in the 60s, got married, and then they was ripped from each other literally in the middle of the night in their bed. It was a true story. And she's played at the National Theatre. So she is a huge inspiration because of her acting choices. And I would love to be able to just have a career like her, definitely, on that one. And then, so sorry, what was the advice to give?
And how do you approach acting? What's your particular, would you describe yourself as having a particular style or?
No, I think each, for me personally, each script requires a different approach. So I will get, if I get offered a job, I will then sort of read through it and go, okay, I'm going to sort of approach it this way, whether it be doing more research first, which would be the Eva. So I focused on, because I said before about the feeling. So the feeling was finding her voice first. So being, I wanted to be comfortable with the accent in the sense of, I didn't want to be on stage going, oh my gosh, did I get that? Did I pronounce that correct? I wanted to get to a point where it was just something else, you know, it's an extension of me. It's now Eva. You can put that sort of cloak on and become her. But so for this one, more research was needed, and, you know, the technicalities of the voice. Whereas the doctors, I worked through the script and I tried to find the feeling within the actual words, as opposed to David's was already there because of all the information that came before. So I suppose you could say that was easier, maybe, in some sense, just because Eva's a real human. So there was lots of information already there, whereas for the doctors, for example, I just, you know, I had to try and find my truth. I suppose looking at a script, I try and find my truth in that, in order for me then to portray it in a truthful human way. So then the audience receive it properly, you know, because I think to make acting look easy, you've got to put a lot of work into it. Like you say, anyone can just read the words off a paper, but whether or not it's believable, you know, that's to be seen.
Yeah, I did a podcast not long ago and I was doing a Nelson Mandela speech, and that was really hard because I was kind of reading it and saying, no, you're not trying to be Nelson Mandela and you're not acting, you're just reading the speech. And I was thinking, I don't know how to approach this, but anyway, that's just by the by. But I think it's interesting that you've got to have that flexibility, because I know some actors are being critiqued for it, for saying, well, you only kind of do those types of role and, you know, you're typecast, or you act in this particular way, and that's quite limiting. I know that's sometimes quite interesting. But it's certainly difficult. I think you've mentioned before that, like, if you want to go into it, like, it's kind of, you've got to want it, you've got to enjoy it. And you need to be able to take those blows without letting it affect you too much if you're going to go into it seriously. And obviously it's a luxury, but it's wonderful to be able to put 100% into something that you love, rather than thinking I need to have a few other options available just in case, you know. So
that's it. Yeah. So I think that's the main thing. If it's the career and it's a passion and you feel like that's what you need to do, absolutely do it, but just be aware of the no's, of the rejection, of how hard it can be. You know, what is it now, that saying where they say, what is it, a 10-year overnight success, something like that, isn't it? That's very true in this industry. You know, there's been a lot that's come before that one big break, and you know, it's fine to do it even if you don't want the one big break. You know, people, it's a very individual thing. Don't think that acting, you're only successful if you've got the Oscar in your hand. That's not it. For me, every job that I get paid to do, because I love it, that's a success. I'm successful. When I can look back at the younger self, I'd be absolutely buzzing with the jobs that I've got, with this one. I mean, like I say, I can gush over this one for such a long time, but I'm just really grateful for this one. As an actor, you want to show your range. And in David's writing, I think that definitely happens. It really does. It's quite interesting. I had a conversation with my boyfriend a couple of days ago. I don't think I would have been able to do this if this was 5 years ago, you know, and I think sometimes your ego might go, yes, you would. But no, I wouldn't, because I wouldn't have been who I am today. I wouldn't have had an understanding of the world, you know, because this is heavy. It really is. So I have to have lived to feel some form of heaviness to portray somebody else's heaviness. So yes, it is. It's if you love it, it's a fantastic industry when you get to work. Yeah, yeah. Like I say, it can be far and few between.
Just finally then, do you have any other creative outlets? Because I know that certainly I like to do a few things, but then you find that there's one that you find particularly rewarding that you might be okay at. And I know I spoke to a children's author. He said that, you know, you write lots of different ways, and he says, and then you find a style that's particularly good for you. So do you have any other creative outlets other than the acting?
Well, it was, so I would say dancing. So it's not professional. I don't do any classes or anything, but every day I dance. And I know, because I think actually my boyfriend would probably say that's not really a creative outlet, but it is. I do that every day because it makes me feel good. I move my body. I'd love to say that, you know, I could, you know, I could write things. And actually, when I was on, when I came back from the tour and it was COVID, I did actually do a little bit of writing poems. And I did actually find one when I was moving house. I thought it was all right, but I think it was only all right because I'd literally only done about two or three. That was it, you know, and I've not done it since lockdown. But at that time, I think I needed that. And I was shocked, actually. And I was talking about the theatre and the stage and everything. So I think that's quite interesting how at that time, for me, that was a creative outlet, probably because I couldn't dance every day because I was still living at home, family of five. Probably thought she's gone mad. But yeah, that at that time, doing those three poems, so I'm definitely not, you know, a poet or anything, but that helped then. So it'd be interesting maybe in, you know, like another 10 years, if I do find along the way where if I go, oh, actually, you know what? This helps me at that moment in time. I'm going to do this as a creative outlet, because acting very much is, writing very much is, and dance it is a creative outlet, isn't it? And I think it's just, for me, actually, from this conversation going forward, I am just going to make, maybe I should get the pen and paper and just see. I'll message you afterwards and go, yeah, it's definitely gone. I had it for the 3 months.
I've wrote about 220 poems. Amazing. And I haven't written one. Actually, I tell a lie, I wrote one last month. Before that, I don't think I've written any for a year. And then you just, it comes and goes. But I was speaking to a poet recently, Isla Horton Foster. And it is interesting how things sometimes come and go. And that creative energy, it's very powerful. And then when you let it out, it's so cathartic, isn't it? And beautiful. But I do find, like, creative people, they often have a creative mind and you view things differently, and I think there's just a pure abandon and beauty about dancing, particularly to your favorite music or whatever. And as I've grown older, I've really started to respect dance more, whereas in the past I would have looked at certainly traditional dancing and gone, oh, whatever. But as I get older, like, you know, even things like ballet, I don't like the stuff that's on TV, the popular stuff, the shows with the celebrities and stuff.
Strictly and stuff.
Yeah, like that. I'm not into that because I think it's, you know, it's overdone for entertainment purposes with all the celebrity. But I really appreciate the discipline of dance, but also the pure release of dance.
Absolutely, because I did it. It was more contemporary that I did for A level, and I could watch contemporary all day. They make, again, the same as, you know, as the same before, as an actor. The best thing as an actor is when someone goes, you know, if you're watching something and someone goes, oh, I could do that. And I think, well, the actor's doing their job right, because they should make it look easy. But obviously, as we all know, you pick up the script and you go, well, that wasn't very human-like. You can tell you're just reading it off a script. But yes, the dancers, especially contemporary and ballet, and they're so graceful and they're so light. How can you be so light when you know it takes every muscle in your body to make it appear that way? I'm definitely going to go and book a dance show now after this.
I went to see a fantastic contemporary play for £10 in Liverpool, like on a Wednesday night. It was one of the most wonderful things I've ever seen. And it was like, the music was a bit, it was like driving house music, which I like. But it was, the whole story was physical dance, contemporary dance. And it was absolutely phenomenal. And I think it's a real treat when you get into it. I don't know if you've heard of Michael Clarke. And many years ago, What's the Culture show on BBC Two. And he was dressed, the bottom half of him was ballet, but the top half of him was very contemporary. So the top half was like very loose and, you know, whatever. And then the bottom half was that discipline of ballet. And I just found that combination absolutely beautiful. But dance for me, as I've got older, my respect for dance is just beautiful to watch. And you know, I think people really miss out when they close their minds after that kind of thing. But seeing it live is like just so powerful in itself, isn't it? And that's why I'm looking forward to watching Forgotten Voices live soon instead of on video.
Absolutely.
But listen, Shirisa, thank you for giving up your time on a Sunday. It's been a wonderful chat about the play, about acting, and about your life as well. It's been quite philosophical in places. I just want to thank you for your honesty and openness and your inspiration. Best of luck with the rest of the run of the play, and best of luck for the future, and best of luck with that award.
Thank you very much for having me. It really has been a pleasure. It's been a great chat. I've probably gone on with myself in places. Sorry about that.
No, it's fine. Thanks everyone for listening. This has been North and South Podcasts. Thanks very much to Shirisa, and have a lovely day, folks. Cheers.